Welcome to the Investing for Life podcast, where we bring you inspiring and educational messages about entrepreneurship, investing, and intentional lifestyle design. Take the next steps to create your most abundant life today. Now here's your host, Tamar Marr.
Hey everyone, Tamar Marr here. Thanks for joining us today. I really enjoyed my conversation with today's guest, Scott Price. I learned so much from him. Again, another benefit of having this podcast is having super in-depth conversations about topics that I love digging into. Scott is a seasoned investor of multifamily, medical, office, retail, and land. So we talk about the difference in underwriting and evaluating different asset classes, investing in secondary and tertiary markets and what to look out for there, how to use your transferable skills across different industries, and strategies for reaching your goals. Let's get to it. Hey, Scott, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks, Tamar. Really glad to be here. Thanks for having me on.
For sure. There's no way I could not interview you, and I've been wanting to for a while. And one of the reasons why is because you and I have been crossing paths for the last couple of years at the different meetups and RIAs and that sort of thing. But I don't think you knew this. I remember you from my very first RIA that I ever went to. I was a commercial real estate meetup group in that Mexican restaurant in Bellevue. And it was when I was first getting started in multifamily. And I sat right next to you and I remember you introducing yourself. And I was like, wow, that guy really has it together.
And I remember that.
You too.
I do. Yeah.
And I showed up to that meeting and I had no idea what I was doing, but I always believe in like fake it till you make it. And I was like, going to go in here and I'm going to introduce myself and I'm going to pretend like I know what I'm talking about, but I didn't. So,
well, you do know what you're talking about and you have made it. So there you go.
I know.
And you're not faking it anymore. So that's good.
Not faking it. No, a lot has happened in the last couple of years and I'm grateful for you being here today with us and sharing your story. And there's so much to talk about because you have just quote unquote retired from your corporate job based off of your real estate holdings. And that was such a huge accomplishment for you. But before we get into that, let's just take a moment. And why don't you just share a little bit with our audience about who you are and what you're about?
Sure. Yeah. So I'm Scott Price. My company is Bonvolo Real Estate Investments. And I've been actively investing for 13 years. I actually did have an investment right out of college as well, but that's a separate story and a good learning. But I'd say my real investing career started about 15 years ago of learning and 13 years ago really starting to actively invest for my own portfolio. And over time, I've brought in mostly rolling my own profits forward. In other words, it's really my own portfolio. I have had a few debt investors along the way. Our next steps are to get into syndications. And along the way, we currently have a portfolio of multifamily, office, retail, medical office, and land. And so we're spread across asset classes, mostly looking for interesting deals, mostly around Washington State. And we look for secondary and tertiary markets that emphasize cash flow. And that emphasis has gotten to this point where both my wife and I have been able to do this full time. And we got to the point where she could do it full time about 4 years ago. And then I went full time. I've been doing it part time, like I said, for 13 to 15 years, but now full time as of earlier this year.
Congratulations on that. And that just led into so many questions that I have. First of all, what does Bonvolo mean, Scott?
Well, it actually is from the language called Esperanto. And if you haven't heard of that, it's a constructed language and it's supposed to be a universal language. It was literally created, unlike most which are organically produced over time in various cultures. It was created to be something that people could speak around the world. So I like that concept. And I started looking for words that I wanted to find a synonym in a universal language and also something that I could trademark and get a URL for and had a nice meeting for it. And it means working well with people and goodwill, kind of a combination between those meanings in Esperanto. So Bonvolo Real Estate Investments came out of that. And now we have a little little R beside our name and our graphics and everything, which means it's a registered trademark. So if you use English words, it's a lot harder to do that.
You are one sharp fella, Scott. My gosh, I have never heard of Esperanto before, but now I do have heard of it, and you satisfied my curiosity. So that's fascinating. Thank you for that. So you have invested in a variety of asset class. You said multifamily, single family, office, retail, medical, land. Why all of these things? And was it a process from you got started with a single family house and then just started doing different things along the way? Or are you a total opportunist and you're like, oh, that sounds cool, let's try that? or like some people do something for a while, for several years, and then they're like, either I'm bored at this, or I realize I'm not going to reach my goals fast enough in this particular area, so I'm going to start moving into another area. What's your story with that?
I'd say for us, it's mostly finding good opportunities and not being restricted on asset class. So I've emphasized educating myself across asset classes. Certainly some people say, you know, get rich in a niche, and I certainly understand that concept. There's a lot of advantages to sticking to one asset class, and that certainly makes sense for a lot of people. I do have preferences. I do have preferred asset classes, but at the same time, along the way, I've known enough about those kinds of asset classes that when I'm looking for deals, I know what to look for in terms of all the various parameters and characteristics of each. And if I see a good deal and it's something that cash flows well so that we can get good income from it, then I'm going to go for it. And there are certain asset classes that I don't have experience in, and those asset classes I don't own any of. I may in the future, but not right now. Mm-hmm. So it's really been a matter of being open to a lot of different ideas. Our bigger thing as well is that we also are looking at multiple markets too. So we're not just investing in our backyard, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And that gives us a lot of flexibility too, because then we can look for better returns and we're not limited to just what is nearby.
When you are evaluating different types of asset classes, so let's say medical and retail versus multifamily or office, is the evaluating criteria much different? And if it is, how so?
A lot different, actually, very different. So for instance, to give you some examples on office, let's say, or retail, actually, they have certain things that overlap and certain things that are different. But in office, I always go in with a good in-place tenant. That's usually been my way of purchasing. I don't buy vacant or high vacancy office or retail. I usually go in to start with a solid tenant who's been there for a while, and they have a good long-term lease. So that makes a couple things easier. Number one, right out the gate, I've got a good solid tenant. I'm not worrying about filling it. Number two, it makes getting financing a lot easier, because unlike multifamily, where there's normal churn of people may be there only a year, with something that's office or retail, there, for instance, some lenders will only lend you for a fixed period that may be just as long as whatever lease you have in place. Oh. So if you only have a year left on your 10-year lease with somebody who's either office or retail, that could make it a lot harder for certain lenders to even lend on it. If I got 5 years on it, then okay, then I'm going to get at least a 5-year term on it. And that's not all lenders, but there are those kind of considerations that help as well as just the security of it. But the bigger thing in terms of criteria is, okay, who is going to be the next tenant? And with multifamily, that has a lot to do with demographics, local employment drivers, you know, what's the local competition in terms of, you know, what's being built? Are you A, B, C, D class? And what's also in that class? All those kinds of things. With office and retail, you've got to be thinking, what specific business wants to be right there in that location and that size and potentially that layout, unless you do a lot of TIs, tenant improvements.
Right.
And you've really got to hone down on thinking specifically who is going to actually be your next tenant. kind of by name almost. So if you have a if you have a property that is set up for either restaurant or coffee or cafe or something, and right next door there's a Starbucks, and on the other side of the street there's a cafe, and there's another one across the street that they just left and they got vacant, then you might have to do a serious repositioning from the perspective of redoing the entire interior to get a different type of tenant. That could be very expensive when you're talking about office or retail. So the biggest difference is looking at who you're currently with, and then really thinking of who specifically are you going to have fill that space in the future. Because even if they've been there a long time, they very well may not be there at the end of the current lease, even if they you know, usually have re-upped leases in the past.
So you still have to do a lot of market analysis, but mm-hmm. it's a different type of market analysis. And how do you go about finding that information? Is that still with brokers? Is it from just driving neighborhoods and seeing like, what do I see on these street corners and how much traffic is going by, or how do you obtain that?
Yeah, the answer is yes, meaning both of those things. In addition to that, I'm also looking to see just a general distribution of, okay, what kinds of businesses are in the area? What are the ones that are doing well? What is vacant and has been sitting vacant? Because that there, you know, maybe not a good property or something, but if there's a type of property that's been sitting vacant a while, then that also can provide feedback on, okay, there's not much demand for that, but there is demand for what is filled. So I'm looking for that, which again is different than multifamily, than, you know, where it's more generic in terms of apartments and things like that.
Yeah.
I also do specifically talk to local chambers of commerce and local economic development councils, especially when I'm first getting into a particular market. If it's a secondary or tertiary market that I, when I'm initially getting familiar with, I definitely reach out to those people and determine, you know, what the interest is. And in addition to real estate brokers, I also talk to property managers, commercial property managers, if it's office and retail, and residential property managers, if it's multifamily. And that's probably one of your best sources right there. So, you know, I'd put them at the top. And then second would be real estate brokers, some of which, especially in the commercial field, do leasing as well, do commercial leasing. And then below that, then I go to all the public sources that are out there.
What information might you obtain from the Chamber of Commerce that's different from the Economic Development Council, and maybe outline for both of them the type of information you can receive? I've gone to the Economic Development Council quite a bit myself, but I haven't gone to the Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah. So for the Economic Development Council, as you probably know, they are generally going to have a bigger picture view of what is the city or the county or both planning? What are they emphasizing? Where are they putting money? Who are they trying to attract? And what are they trying to currently do to grow the local economy? And also what kind of recent successes have they had? And that can provide a good indicator on where things are currently at and where things are going in general in terms of what kind of demand there might be. Also, you got to be thinking in terms of ripple effect. And what I mean by that is if an auto plant goes in, then that's great. I don't own any auto plants. But at the same time, near that auto plant, depending upon the size of it, they may need a Subway sandwich shop and they may need a gas station and those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. And so you kind of think of, okay, what's the downstream ripple effect from even the big movers in the market? So the Economic Development Council is going to have that bigger picture view and a longer range view. Chamber of Commerce, I've found a couple things. Number one, they have on a smaller scale, similar information, not the same, but similar. They tend to be a little bit more near-term focused. They're really focused on generating more business for their members. And however, they do hear things through the grapevine, and including people who contact the Chambers of Commerce, even more so a lot of times than the Economic Development Council, specifically for buildings or for basically trying to get advance notice on, hey, we business A need a building. And do you know of any? And that a lot of times people aren't even familiar with economic development councils. They're more familiar with chambers just from just hearing about them. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times the chambers will get contacted for that. And I've also had chambers of commerce basically be on the lookout for me. In other words, I'll say, hey, I have this building and it's this kind, give them the criteria, and they'll say, okay, well, great. Well, when we're talking to people, we'll keep that in mind. I'll send them marketing information, flyer, and I also will join chambers of commerce as well.
Just going to ask you that question. You led into that perfectly.
It's like, And that does two things. I mean, it's number one, it's generally to support the local economy, because I want the local economy to do well, because for my properties to do well. So I want to support them because that's their mission. And that's one thing. The other thing are the connections. And then the third thing is that they actually can help as a member, looking out for me, and as I am helping by being a member and paying for my membership in their chamber.
Wow, this is all fantastic. Thank you for breaking those down. I haven't discussed that on this show before, and that's wonderful. You mentioned, Scott, that you invest in secondary and tertiary markets. I do the same thing. I find that I do syndications. You said you've done mostly your own investing, but you're getting into syndications. And so I find that for me, I'm comfortable going into tertiary markets, but sometimes investors are a little bit more cautious going into tertiary markets. So what do you see as attractive in investing in both those different areas? What do you look for? And do you feel like there will be a difference between you doing it on your own versus bringing in a bunch of partners?
So let's see here. So I'll start with some of the differences. So for me, the main reason I started in tertiary markets was cash flow. Mm-hmm. And it really boiled down to that. In general, as across the market, not always the case, there are certainly exceptions, but in general, your primary markets, you're going to get your lowest cap rates or your lowest return on your dollar. And then your secondary markets, you're going to get a little bit more. And your tertiary markets, you're going to get a little bit more than that. Mm-hmm. And the reasons are because there's at least a perception of increased risk, number one. And then number two, people like to invest in what they know. And number three, there's a lot of money that tends to be in the big cities. Mm-hmm. And that money tends to stay local, not always, but it tends to stay local. So when you combine all those three things, people are throwing a lot of money in their backyard and they're reducing risk because of something that they know. So they're putting more money into the big markets, the primary markets, and it kind of goes down from there. What's been happening recently, meaning the last few years, is that because the cap rates and the return on investment has gotten so low, you know, it's a great time to sell, hard time to buy right now, that investors who used to only be in primary markets are now actually going out to secondary and tertiary markets. I've always been in secondary and tertiary markets, but at the same time, now there's definitely more competition in the secondary and tertiary markets. And it's just a chase for yield. It's just a yield on their dollar. Yeah. So it is more competitive, but nonetheless, there's still a difference. The big thing to be aware of now in the secondary and tertiary markets is if years ago you used to have a 2 or 3 or sometimes 4%, depending on where you were at, difference in cap rate from your big primary markets to your tertiary markets. In other words, if you got a 5% cap in a big town and you get an 8% cap or even 9% cap in a small town, that has been compressed.
Yeah, so, right. That.
Yeah, and that's a bit of a risk because when things go downhill, you know, or meaning there's a recession or something like that, they may expand again. So when you're out in a secondary, tertiary market, if you can ride it out from a cash flow basis, you're fine. But if you intend to sell, And if your cap rate is expanding more than the primary markets, then you're going to be left holding the bag. So, or if you have to refinance too, you may have to come out of pocket to make up the difference on a lower priced property. But our approach has always been based on cash flow. We always get very long term fixed or just overall loans that can either be have a fixed period and then will roll over based on an index. And so we always kind of like buy and hold for the long term. And even if the value goes down, we don't care. If anything, maybe our property taxes go down. It's actually a good thing. Yeah. But anyhow,
I just want to say, everybody pause and rewind that for about a minute and a half, because that was pure gold what Scott just said about the difference in the primary and the tertiary markets and the cap rates condensing, so there isn't as much as a difference. People chasing yield, and there can be a bigger risk putting your money in if the market then contracts. So the long-term debt is very important. I do the same strategy with my investments as well. I don't want to get stuck at the bottom of a pit and have to sell or refinance. So be thinking about that when you're moving to these other places. It doesn't mean that they're not a great place to invest. They are if it's the right strategy for you, but make sure that you're doing your due diligence and practicing just some smart moves when it comes to financing, especially.
Yeah. And as far as things to look for there are a lot of especially tertiary markets, a lot of small towns. You can get really small. I've looked at some that I would say don't meet certain criteria, which I can go into later. But the main things that I'm looking for when I'm getting outside of the big employment centers, the big cities, is a combination of history, meaning, okay, whatever they have out there to offer right now in terms of economy and population, what has been the consistency of that? Number two, where has it been going on a trajectory, meaning how is it trending? So has it been going down? Has it been going steady? Has it been going up? And has it been going up in several, I'm obviously looking for something that's ideally going up, both in terms of economic drivers, which also tends to drive the second part, which is population drivers. And so I'm looking at, okay, what is the underlying economy that's in that particular town? Some of these towns have decreasing populations. And if you have any type of asset class, for the most part, any type, it's going to get hurt by that. If certainly multifamily, because you'll have obviously lower population, less people, but that population are also the people who are filling office and retail, and there's less business, and it can actually become a vicious cycle. So you gotta watch out for that. So I'm looking for ones that have are trending upwards and also have a long range plan. If they have a good foundation under them, and that meaning they've got something they've been relying on for years, and then they've got something interesting going on. They have an active local government, they have active local economic development council, active chamber, and then there seems to be some buzz around it. And also on a sub market level, also there tend to be areas of a particular town that have more buzz than other areas. So that happens anywhere, including in Seattle, including in anywhere. But you even on a smaller scale, the same kinds of stuff happen. Some places gentrify, some places they get a big Walmart and everything grows up around it, and then the other old town section then starts going downhill, and it starts to get hard to fill those kinds of offices and retail spaces. So you got to see where things are moving. And it's a lot more important in those secondary and tertiary markets, because you don't have just the mass of volume of business and people that you get in the primary markets.
So true. So true. Thank you for all of that. I wanted to rewind a moment to your corporate life. So like I said, I was stalking your LinkedIn profile earlier before our interview, and I knew you had worked at Microsoft, but I guess I hadn't realized that you had been in the real estate space at Microsoft.
Right.
Doing, I think, like implementation of real estate technologies and lease administration and analytics and finance and those sort of things. So Did you find that in tandem working in that role, it really helped you in this business, in your personal investing business?
It did, and it actually helped both ways. I was already at Microsoft, and I was working in what you would consider to be more, you know, traditional technology programs that you would consider to be with Microsoft. And I was basically having roving eyes. I liked the group I was with, but I was thinking, okay, you know, time for a change, and still liked the company, but wanted to make a change in terms of group and get some different experiences. And literally, as I was going through the job boards, I saw something coming up from their real estate and facilities department. And just this huge light bulb went over on over my head. I'm thinking, oh my gosh, I hadn't even thought of that. And, you know, I still have a broker's license. I don't represent clients, but I have it for investing purposes. You know, so I've got a lot of experience there. I've been investing in commercial real estate, although of course on a much smaller scale, but investing in commercial real estate for years. I live and breathe this stuff. This is the stuff that I research in my own personal time. Yeah. And, you know, when I went into the interview, I aced it because I had the technology background and I had the real estate background. Yeah, most people don't have that. And so it was a great combination, and so I could bring to the job from day one my experience. And then the other way around, the thing that I got from it was it's such a huge scale. It's roughly, depending on how you calculate it, it's something around 36 million square feet of office and other space. Around the world. So, you know, thinking on that scale and getting exposed to the technologies that are coming from real estate, and that's a big thing that's coming across all asset classes, and it's slowly coming along. And a lot of people are looking at that as really an opportunity area for investors, is implementing better technologies. And that is across the board, you know, property management software and utility management software and space utilization and how you're, you know, optimizing your utilities automatically sensing system. There's this whole bunch of things that are going on right now. Most of it tends to be the really big players, but like anything, it's starting to trickle down. And so that was a great learning experience for me to actually apply not only really big picture thinking, but also where some of the really large projects, how they're managed and how they're optimized.
And, you know, I think that a lot of corporate experience can directly translate to an investing career. I know that for me, when I was helping run a regulatory solutions company on Wall Street, and it was so boring to me, all these regulations, and everybody thought I didn't pay attention to it, but it was so funny when I started doing all of my commercial multifamily investing, especially, and all the syndication piece where there are regulations surrounding that, all of that knowledge just came right back to me. And I was like, oh my gosh, sometimes just pay attention to stuff, even like if you're interested in it or you're not interested in it, because your brain will save it for later and you can directly apply it to something else that's going on. Or if you're in analytics or you're in finance, there's always something that you can use from another position or a path for your life to plug in here.
Absolutely. And I would say the even more valuable thing, and this isn't just my most recent position there, but across the board and my various experiences, have been more of what I would call transferable skills. So my program management background and my team management background have been invaluable, because those, and in many cases, they were not real estate specific, but those transferable skills have been really invaluable for my real estate investing as I've grown my portfolio.
Absolutely. Now, Karen, I think that's the name of your wife. Am I right?
Yes.
Okay. So Karen, you said she was able to leave 4 years ago, her work, and then you recently. When did you know that you could retire? And I guess the question I'm trying to get at was, were you working towards like a specific passive income goal that was not just replacing your income or more than replacing your income or some other different parameter? How were you able to make the decision that it was okay to leave a cushy corporate job?
Yeah. So, yeah, really, I could have left earlier. But at the same time, what we were doing, my plan was, along the way, one of the reasons we were able to grow our portfolio organically. In other words, without syndications, although again, that's where we're going next, but that's just to grow the business more. But we essentially rolled our profits forward and we're not relying on any of the income from our portfolio to cover our expenses. Mm-hmm. And that was the main reason that actually I kept working a W-2 job for so long, was the real estate profits were going into more real estate. And and basically trying to create a flywheel effect. And so when I left, we were comfortable. We more than covered the corporate job in terms of salary. And the other big thing was really also I'm pretty conservative. Some people may have actually left earlier and jumped in earlier, but I've taken a gradual conservative approach and been, gradually building it on my own, and just got to the point where a combination of liquid assets, to rely on, plus being able to cover all expenses, and plus the third part of being confident in our properties. In other words, I wanted to make sure that we had put a lot of capital investment into the properties so that that I'm not suddenly getting a $30,000 bill for a new roof on something. And when you're relying on your income, and your income from those properties, that if it's a smaller property, that $30,000 might obliterate the income for that entire year, or even more, for that property. So, it was a combination of things just to make sure, in a good space and felt comfortable about it.
Some very smart planning there. Thank you for sharing that. You are a goal setter, and I also hear about you that you like doing vision boarding, that's really important to you. And I want to dig into that, some of your daily processes that help you get to where you want to go. What are some of the strategies that you use?
Sure. Yeah. So we, Karen and I, about 15 years ago or so, we created a graphical vision board. There are different types, and basically it's a poster and it hangs in our office, and it is, we cut out pictures sometimes from magazines, but of course in the internet world, mostly downloaded and printed. And then we pasted it onto literally a large piece of paper and thumbtacked it on the wall. And it represents things that we want to do with our life. And it's a daily visual reminder, which I find it more interesting. It's more interesting to have this thing that has pictures of that represent concepts of what you want to do. And it's, you can kind of get the feel of it quicker by glancing at it than if it was just a bunch of words and things like that. Some people do words. A friend of mine does one that she does on a big whiteboard, and every year she changes it. But we prefer graphics. And then that's all nice, all nice and good. Most people don't do that, but that's all nice and good. But it doesn't mean anything unless you do something about it. Yeah. So the next step really was keeping all those things in mind and then starting to put into practice actual processes and a step-by-step process to get us to each of those goals. And what I ended up doing, I've read a lot of books about goal setting and basically life planning, lifestyle planning, things like that. And what I ended up doing was I took a best of approach, and I took what I thought was the best from individual books and different webinars and all these kinds of things that I'd seen. And I condensed it down into something that could fit into an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. And I'm generally an electronic guy, meaning, everything's online, and it's on my computer and on my phone, all that kind of stuff. But I found that the tangible nature of having a piece of paper sitting beside me on my desk that reminded me of what I should do today was better than it's in a window at the bottom, than the taskbar of my computer, and I got to remember to bring it up and look at it, and I might forget about it. And it was a lot more tangible in my face. And it was also, you also get the satisfaction of having a pen by it and checking something off, And yeah, exactly. It's funny how that physical, you know, see the physical action is better than checking a checkbox on the screen, you know, even though it's a pretty minor thing. So what I did was I have basically it's a form and it's just personalized for me. I have four top goals there and I have 3 to 4 sub goals under that. And then I below that I have what I consider to be daily maintenance kinds of things. In other words, exercise. They're just things that aren't specific to today, but that I want to make sure I'm remembering to do every day. So exercise, eat well, you know, those kinds of things that you would say, okay, well, that's great. But actually at the end of the day, if I've eaten a bunch of garbage, I gotta actually realize that I didn't eat well, you know, or I didn't exercise. Yeah. And on the right hand side, I grade myself at the end of the day. And I have basically it's 3 columns, yes, no, or partial. And what that means is yes, I did that. No is no, I didn't. And partial is, yeah, I made some inroads on it, but I didn't really do what I set out at the beginning of the day. And at the beginning of the day, I have that form, but at the beginning of the day, I'm actually writing down, what am I going to do today? I'm writing down by pen. So the form is kind of the high level goals. And then by pen, I'm writing, okay, what am I going to do today that's related to that sub goal, which is kind of like a month to a few months goal, that's related to the big goal, which is the 4 top level goals. And those are more like larger life goals, you know, multi-year kinds of things. And I grade myself at the end of the day. and I do a little journal thing, just a few lines at the bottom, a couple other things, and it all fits on a sheet of paper. And I do that each day, and it keeps me moving forward and focused. And it also reminds me of things that are distractions, and it, as well as keeping me focused on the things that are more important.
So just to reiterate what you do, it seems like every day, ideally, you would fill out this form. The big goals and the sub goals remain the same pretty consistently for a period of maybe anywhere from a couple weeks to a couple months or longer. Mm-hmm. The big goals might be years. And then mm-hmm. you also every day are saying for each of these sub goals, what are the things that I can do today to get closer to that?
Yes. And what are the important things? And, you know, I may have separate from that an overall plan or something like that. But in some cases I do. But in most cases, it's an iterative process of, okay, what is the next most important step to achieving that goal? Or what can I do today to achieve that goal?
Have you read The One Thing by Keller?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sounds very like that. And then this other, for any of you out there listening who have listened to the MF CEO project, the host of that one talks about doing something like this where he has his I forget what he calls it, but it's like his list of the top 5 things that he needs to get done for the day to get him towards his goals. And once he does those 5 things for the day, he feels like he's totally okay signing off. He's okay not doing anything for work for the rest of the day because those things make him feel good enough about moving closer towards his objective. And mm-hmm. I do this practice too. I've gotten away from it the last couple of weeks for whatever reason. And I feel a little bit more scatterbrained. When I do it every day, when I write, I usually do the top 3 things that I need to get done. And when I do that, my day is focused, it's clear, I feel great about myself. And when I don't do it, it's like, okay, I have all these things that I need to do. And there's so much going on in my head all the time. So one of these lists really helps you just narrow down, focused, get a laser-like mental quality about your day so that you can get to where you need to go. So I think this is a really great practical tool for those of you wanting to move forward with some life plans. That is fantastic. Anything else that you can say about, you know, goal planning or daily processes, or is that pretty much about it?
Yeah, I'd say to me, the biggest thing is that it is nice to revisit on an annual basis, but I would question why is January 1st that important? And what I mean by that is, you can do this anytime, number one. And number two, I would emphasize the self-motivation. In other words, you know, the vision board is the bigger why, as some people say, you know, what's your why? And at any time you can start it, And also on top of that, it really should be updated at any time. If anything changes in your life, or in some cases, if your interests change or something like that, that's okay. So, you know, you don't have to finish a goal if it's not of any interest anymore or something like that, but make sure it's for that reason. It's not just, it's too hard or something like that. And so that would be one thing I would say. The other thing is that it's really important to break it down, any kind of long-range goal, so that it's not overwhelming, and also so that you can make actionable steps on a small scale, and those actionable steps really do add up. A lot of people, I feel, and from what I've heard, will stop doing something, some particular goal, because the end goal is so far away and it's so huge and it seems so difficult or takes too long. But if you make those incremental steps every day, then all of a sudden one day you're surprised of, oh my gosh, here I am.
I wasn't this far along 6 months ago, but look at all these compounding effects.
Exactly. And you're still accomplishing something. In other words, it's not just binary of you're here and you have a multi-year goal done. Along the way, you have sub-goals and you get the satisfaction of achieving those as well. You know, it's also hard, I think, in some people's mind when it's just binary of you're either here or not having done the goal. And whereas when you have these sub-goals, you have something that you can accomplish, and you do get that feedback loop, that positive feedback loop.
Yeah, absolutely. Scott, what are you most looking forward to these days?
Well, right now, getting done or moving out of cardboard boxes. We just built a home, and which was also on our vision board, and also in the location that was on our vision board, and type of home that was on our vision board. So we're getting near completing that to be truly moved in. I've recently been so focused on the house. It'll be really nice to focus on other things. So that's my first focus, and then then after that, which will be coming soon, really a couple things. Number one, really getting back into our investing business. Although we have a good one now with a nice portfolio, I do look to grow it, and that's where, like I said, our next phase. We'll still do some investing on our own, but we do want to get into syndication. So that'll be an interesting next phase of our business. And then the other thing that I'm actually on the personal is that I'm actually going to be creating a public sculpture park. Yeah. And I already own the land, and I already have a plan for it, but I haven't had time to work on it. And now I have time to work on it. So it's going to be a privately funded public sculpture park. So that's my what's that?
Is that up on Whidbey?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Wow. That is so cool. I can't wait to hear more about that.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. It'll start out as a trail through the woods at first. So it'll be a publicly accessible trail system. And then the next phase after that will actually be along the trail. People will actually get to experience sculpture.
So. Was that of your own inspiration? Where did that idea come from?
Yeah, actually, there are a couple outdoor sculpture parks in Washington, and those were the initial inspiration. I love them. I just love the experience of them. I love outdoor sculpture in a natural setting. And it's beautiful for the forest. Actually, it's a really interesting way to experience a forest. And it makes walking along a trail like a treasure hunt. In other words, you enjoy the forest, and all of a sudden, oh, there's this interesting sculpture, and you get to experience art, and you get to do both at the same time. There are a couple in Washington State, and I learned a little bit about there. I'm going to do it different than they did it, but the underlying concept was from a couple I had seen.
Huh. You are such a cool person. It's just really neat. I really love that. Oh, well, I could talk to you forever. I just don't want to take up more of your time, and we'll draw things to a close here. But if people want to find out more about you, your sculpture park, Bonvolo, the what is it, the Esperanto language, Bonvolo? That's right.
And yeah, you don't have to know Esperanto to speak to me, so that's
okay,
fine.
Okay, great. I felt a little bit intimidated before, but I don't care about that. How can they find out about you?
The easiest way would be through my website, which is bonvolo.com, and that's B-O-N as in November, V as in Victor, O-L-O.com. And on there, I've got my phone number, got a contact form, which goes to email, things like that. So anybody can, there's multiple ways to reach out to me there.
Fantastic. Thanks again, Scott, for sharing your knowledge with us. And we'll look forward to seeing you achieve great success in the future.
Thank you, Tamar.
Scott and I talked about daily processes and how they can help you reach your goals. That makes sense at this time of year to think about those things. What are your daily processes? Do you have them defined or do you shoot from the hip? How do you think refining those processes can impact you? Make sure to take some time to think about that. Invest some time and some energy now to figure out how you can better impact your future self. Thanks so much for listening. Catch you again soon.